We are certainly on the fly, and we are having a great fun time in the Fun Fly Zone today, which, I mean, we don't normally do this on a Wednesday, but we got it all switched up this year, Tim. And I know when I told you that I'm coming on Wednesday instead of Thursday, you're like, well, you always come down here on Thursday. Well, we don't have to. You know, here we are.
We can stay flexible. We're on the fly.
Yeah, we can stay flexible. We're on the fly. It's exactly right. So we are dedicating this show this year to the 50th anniversary of Ultralights at Oshkosh.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And with that, we talked to John Moody about the Icarus, and then Mula about the restoration, and then talk a little bit about more about where the Icarus went.
Yeah, so Icarus, you know, obviously became very popular. People saw it here in Oshkosh. People wanted to buy one. And Larry Morrow, who was the kit producer for the Icarus, realized that it was just a little hard to build, as we learned from the last one. So he refined it, he re-engineered it, and came up with something called the Easy Riser, which was much easier to build, flew a little bit better, maybe was a little bit stronger, arguably. And that's really what a lot of people bought and really what sended ultralighting to where we are today. 50 years later, we're still doing it. And it's all kind of based on that Icarus and Easy Riser development. And with us today, we have a owner and a pilot of an Easy Riser that's been doing it since the beginning. Eric Wallner, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Yeah.
I appreciate the invitation.
Yes, yes. I saw you fly in this morning. You actually have your Easy Riser here and
Correct.
Flew it this morning in front of the crowd. What was that like?
It was wonderful. I still marvel at the enthusiastic response the Easy Riser gets. And this morning, to be honest with you, the flight was a little bumpy. We've had, you know, a storm front move through. It's been kind of ratty the last 2 days, but finally it was flyable this morning, and I got to go up. And again, I'm always humbled and so delighted to see so much enthusiasm for this plane that I've been flying now for 48 years.
It's so unique, being a biplane with mm-hmm. no tail.
Indeed.
Yeah. Tell me about controllability. What, like a day like today, you said it's a little bumpy. How do you control the thing?
It's a fascinating design from that standpoint, because it's so different from a conventional aircraft. The control comes through two courses. The pitch is controlled by weight shift inside the plane. That's easily done just by simply rotating my torso forward and back inside the plane. You have to consider that the plane weighs 120 pounds. I'm 160. I account for 60% of the gross weight.
Wow.
So moving my weight 8 inches forward and back has a dramatic effect on the CG, and hence the descent or the climbing of the craft. And the other factor is that on each wingtip, just like the Icarus, like John's Icarus, there are wingtip rudders, and there are twist grips, a right-hand one and a left-hand one. And to turn right, you twist the right-hand grip. It slows that wing down. The plane banks remarkably quickly and efficiently. And it works so well that I can go from a 45-degree right-hand bank to a 45-degree left-hand bank and turn in under 2 seconds.
Wow, that's a pretty good roll rate.
So even though the plane seems like it's such an archaic, an old design, it drives like a sports car. It's hard to get that across, but in the bumps this morning, yes, it was bumpy. I was going up and down, but I have every faith in the plane from having ridden out thermals in the past that it can handle anything.
I'm looking at your plane right now. It's right in front of us, and mm-hmm. it's a beautiful example of an Easy Riser.
Thank you.
I want to congratulate you. It's just beautiful. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
How long has that plane been flying?
I completed it in 1986, so when you see it here on the grounds, it was originally, when I finished it, it was to be foot-launched, and that's how I flew it. It had a different motor. It had a McCulloch go-kart engine on with a reduction drive. This is now a more modern paraglider motor, because my old McCulloch motor got to be hard to find parts, and these new little motors made for the paragliders are less like They're like Swiss watches. They're just works of art, and they run so well, and they're so much more efficient, and they're easy to rebuild. There's just so many pluses in them. And I suppose the next step would be to go electric, but I haven't found that kind of motor yet. And, you know, who knows? I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to fly this. Maybe another 10 years. We'll see.
I wonder if that would be a good candidate for electric power.
It probably would be. My personal love of flying with the Easy Riser is to thermal soar. And having a little electric motor, especially if you could do a folding prop and a battery pack behind your shoulder blades or something, that would be so streamlined. And it would be so light that I could probably go back to foot launching again. Whereas with this motor, it's still a little bit on the heavy side.
It's nice to have some wheels on it, huh?
It really is.
So we were talking earlier, and you were talking about how you first got into ultralighting. Tell the story about how that happened.
It ties directly into John Moody. I was 16 years old. I was doing my paper route. I lived in my parents' house west of Milwaukee, a city of New Berlin, and I was doing my paper route in my junior year, 1976, and I heard this noise, this horrific roar, scream overhead, and overhead, probably 800 feet or so, was this white banana drifting by, and I had no idea what it was. I've built model airplanes before. I thought maybe it was a radio-controlled plane, and it passed by, and I thought, son of a gun, there is somebody in that, and I could see John's backside hanging out the bottom of the plane. He's such a small guy to begin with, and he was very compact. You could hardly tell there was a man in there, and it flew over, and I just could not believe it, and I managed to keep my ears attuned, so when he was heading back, I saw him a few days later. It turns out that John was doing his very first cross-country flight, and the Milwaukee Mitchell Field tower control area didn't quite come to my subdivision, and the next one west was Waukesha, and those two almost touched, and I just happened by coincidence to be in the gap between these two control zones that John was rightfully flying in between, and I happened to see it. Had my parents chosen another lot a mile east or west, I would never have seen John, and I may not be here today.
How did you wind up then buying an Easy Riser from John?
I came here to Oshkosh the following year, the year of
77,
exactly. And John was here with Larry Morrow, the designer of the Easy Riser. They were on the flight line. There was no ultralight area. They were in amongst all the other planes. And I met John, and I saw the plane. I was here with my uncle Hank, who was building a BD-5 in his garage. And my Uncle Hank was quite the builder. And I told my Uncle Hank, I'm going to build one of these things, Uncle, and it's going to be sooner rather than later. And he's walking around the plane being this consummate builder. He's looking it over, and he said, well, we can make this, and we can make this. And I said, Uncle Hank, I am not going to follow your path and make everything for it. I want to get flying sooner rather than later. Little did I know that 8 months later I would be making my first flight while I was still 18. So I took the brochure home. I paid the $15 that was put towards my plane. I got home and decided that I'm going to get this thing for sure. I called up UW Whitewater, where I was intent on going to school. I wasn't really that intent on going to school. I asked them to send my $600 down payment back, and I put that towards the $520 first third of the cost of the riser and the motor. And then I told my parents that I'm going to be not going to school that fall. And they asked me, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to build an airplane in the garage if you'll let me.
Oh, that went over like a ton of lead balloons, I bet.
I'm fortunate to be one of those people that has really receptive and parents who are really good listeners and are always encouraging. That's their hallmark. And I never looked back. I ended up flying for a radio station. for 4 years and having a dealership selling them. And it completely changed my life.
So you've been flying Easy Risers since 1977, is it?
77. 78 is when I made my first flight.
78.
Yep.
You got a 50th anniversary coming up here in a couple of years.
I do.
I hope we see you back here with your Easy Riser, and we'll celebrate your 50th anniversary flying Easy Risers.
I'll accept that.
Okay. That'll be fun. You know, I thought he was going to say, you know, I got a Nez Pizza delivery.
No.
You got the radio station.
Yeah.
Jay, he flew for a radio station. He got paid by a radio station to fly and advertise.
For 4 years, I flew 30 flights a summer.
That's crazy. Okay. Yep. Well, thank you for joining us again on the radio.
Thank you very much for asking.
Tim, thanks for co-hosting again this year.
You're welcome. It's been fantastic.
It's been a great afternoon down here celebrating the Icarus and the 50th anniversary of Ultralights at Oshkosh, so thank you. And, Eric, thank you for your story. It was really interesting. You're listening to EAA Radio.